Hello, my name's Richard Thomas, and this is I'm Ready for My Close-Up. Tonight we look at two filmmakers that, in their own distinct way, explore nature and its representation, Margaret Tate and Chris Welsby. Chris Welsby is less than well known as the quintessential avant-garde landscape filmmaker, though his work is as much concerned with meteorology as it is with topography. Welsby has attached cameras to wind vanes, astronomical devices, windmills, and so on in order to subject camera and microphone to the forces of nature itself. Welsby embarked on his artistic career as a painter, often exposing canvases to the effects of weather. Not much has changed except 50% of his material. He switched canvas, gouache, oil, or whatever for celluloid. Why he stopped painting is unclear, but clearly he felt his pigments were failing him, and for the best part of 30 years, Welsby has made films. To be lazy, I'll say that Welsby's work could be seen in the context of the 1970s land art movement and seems to be living in the same aesthetic neighbourhood as environmental acoustics artists like R. Murray Schafer. Welsby's zeal for the beauty and hideous randomness of nature is also reminiscent of John Cage's attempts to graft bioacoustics aspects into the mechanics of abstract music composition. Welsby can also be quite heartily likened to the British sound artist Max Eastley. Like Eastley, Welsby creates installations. Some of the devices and contraptions Welsby constructs to aid and abet his filmmaking are curious sculptural artifacts in themselves that aren't so dissimilar from Eastley's assemblages. Kinetic objects powered by simple or complex mechanics or the unpredictable patterns of weather. In fact, in the same way Stan Brakhage believed use of a handheld camera permitted the film to absorb the vibrations of his body and embody them within the film, Welsby doesn't simply visually depict the state of weather, but in a kind of sparring match of the world versus a camera, he enables the mechanical filmmaking process itself to be catalysed by the weather, so barometric pressure does all the animation. Welsby's equipment often consists of the kind of stuff one would expect to find on some sort of arcane camping trip. Ropes, winches, tubing, meteorology gear, pulleys, motorised devices originally designed for astronomical observation, and, no doubt, tents. In some ways, Welsby's filmmaking is not so much about the lens as it is about the tripod and its ability to happily coexist with prosthetic devices such as weather vanes. And acoustically, the emphasis is on environmental sound and its sometimes visceral impact upon microphones. Indeed, Welsby's film soundtracks are very strong, usually consisting of either forensically recorded natural sound, the visual equivalent would be macro lens shots, or field recordings, wider in scope and totally exposed to the elements. Another distinctive aspect is the projection process. Welsby's films are usually split or multi-screen projections, anything I suppose to communicate the multiplicity of impacts that the weather has on a modified Bolex. A few months ago, the BFI released a DVD selection of Welsby's work from the last 30 years, and for the next 10 minutes we'll hear a montage of excerpts from its soundtrack, plus some words from Chris himself, talking about his films 7 Days, River Yar, and Streamline, amongst others. These films are all unique, but share the same fascination for the random impact of weather and nature upon filmic structure and cinematographic capture. To purchase the DVD or to find out further information about Chris Welsby, go to bfi.org.uk or go to our blog site imreadyformypodcast.blogger.com for more links.
Well, I think there were two main influences. One was from the sciences, in which the idea of process and structure is very central to the idea of consciousness, or to at least of cognition. And that seemed to be part of the creative process that drives the whole natural machine forward, the creative process of life itself. And that became very interesting because it was a model in which mind was actually immanent in nature. And so that fitted very well with my idea about not wanting to make films which were about nature, but wanting to make films that were actually incorporated into the structure of nature. I was at Chelsea School of Art doing painting, and there was a huge and very fascinating debate going on about the language of film, and oddly enough about specifically about process and structure. So I just made the connection, and that's really the way that I developed my, you know, aesthetic in terms of filmmaking. It just fell into place. The machines that I've used, like the equatorial stand and like the wind vane and all of those things, I think of them as being extensions of the camera, rather like using a tripod, really, only more so. And I enjoy building devices, and sometimes it's necessary to build them to sort of expose something that you couldn't do with just the camera by itself. I took sound samples every 2 hours with a directional microphone, simply following the rotation of the Earth. So, and that gives it that very sort of dramatic bang and whoosh and all the rest of it.
Close-up on Resonance 104.4 FM. For the last 10 minutes or so, you've been listening to the soundtracks to some of Chris Wellesby's films. These films were recently made available on DVD by the British Film Institute. Now I want to attempt to talk intelligently, entertainingly, and no doubt fairly pretentiously about Margaret Tate, whose films have also recently been made available via the Lux. The compilation DVD is Margaret Tate Selected Films 1952 to 1976. If you want to purchase these or find out more about Margaret Tate, go to www.lux.org.uk/Margaret Tate, and Tate is spelled T-A-I-T. It is pertinent that Margaret Tate studied neorealism in Rome. It is coincidental that Tate is an anagram of Tatty, but in their quiet bemusement, Tate's tragical, whimsical documentaries of nothing in particularness exude similar sentiments to the gentle slapstick of Jacques Tati. Then again, they also look like the rushes from a Scottish television children's education film circa 1968. Tate's films are certainly not comedies, though they have a warmth and general good humour that could be mistaken for joviality. Tate's films aren't really documentaries in the common sense of the word. In fact, Margaret Tate's films are almost home movies, hyper-subjective, incredibly domestic, and yet somehow open and ambiguous and full of the world. Reportage of total maximum ordinariness, pre-video video diaries choking with romantic awe for animals, fishing boats, insects and the earth. To be negative, Tate's films are special, but I'm sure there are car boot sales aplenty knocking out house clearance Super 8 movies, all of which I'm sure are totally beautiful and shocking in their heart-aching nostalgic fuzziness. Television aerials, terraced houses, macro shots of grass disturbed by a breeze, snowfall in a terraced street and a man and two dogs, a pensioner sweeping snow from her doorstep, pervert's eye views of neighbours, raindrops in puddles, dew on a birch tree, a woman digging potatoes, macros of roots and tubers, solarised foliage and beautiful macro shots of flora and fauna, a dead chaffinch, a worm wriggling across freshly turned soil, smoking peat, a primitive hearth fire, a blackbird through a window in autumn winter, and panning shots of dusk captured in sepia melancholy. Light bulbs, construction sites, the seashore at low tide, seaside illuminations, a gas hob, a frozen sea, a coal fire, folk tunes, sounds of builders and machinery, children tobogganing, a crescent moon, the interior of a small house. These are some of the images and sounds you may see or hear in a Margaret Tate film rendered in colour and black and white. However, we shan't be seeing any of those because, of course, this is the radio. As I mentioned, Tate's films resemble documentaries, but only superficially. Their flow is as vague as a memory of a memory of a memory of a daydream of a memory of an afternoon spent daydreaming. This is exacerbated by her use of music and sound. Sound and music are asynchronous most of the time, or there is no diegetic sound, just amusical music and sounds which move in sympathetic but less than parallel counterpoint to the imagery. Tate's use of sound, music and voices is utterly radiophonic too, and it's this weave perhaps more than the visual stitch that provides the poetry in Tate's so-called poetry films. This strikes me as being the perfect opportunity to demonstrate just what I'm talking about, but before I do it, I also want to mention another published object that is concerned with Margaret Tate, and it's a book called Subjects and Sequences, and it's edited by Peter Todd and Benjamin Cook. And it's also published by Lux. So as I said, go to lux.org.uk/Margaret Tate for further information. But in the meantime, here's the audio track to several of Margaret Tate's films.
Thank you. Well, yes, I do remember the young men going off to fight in Spain. But not Sawley MacLean. Not Sawley MacLean and his pain. Then them coming back changed, and yet not changed enough for my notion then of what war might be. Frozen soldiers of the plains, stiff in trees, in photographs, the black showing through the thin snow on the hard plain of Madrid, as shown to us in newsreels, stick in my vision, and click now with MacLean's poems to Eivir, and Lorca's new men of the boughs.
Major share in the benefits of North Sea oil. This is very, very important indeed.
Before you pay the loans.
Well, I think we must leave it there, but bring in finally and briefly Miss...
There is broadcast a message every half hour from the Minister for Communication, Major Osorio, at close assistance.
You're making a very bad case for self-rule. The group were protesting about the government's record in the province.
They include an American woman who's an official at the United States Embassy and a Venezuelan consul and vice-consul. The guerrillas, 20...
who said the Labour government had held the rate when the building societies were trying to push it up to 13%. The sun
is gonna shine. And his body was found in woods near the airport.
On how to cope with the rising price of oil, Britain is represented by the Chancellor.
...of its membership. And a correspondent says it's likely that...
Most places will have quite heavy showers, perhaps with hail and thunder.
An ocean big drift net to capture the seawater, to capture the light. No instrument nor implement is necessary. The light is there, look. Look into all that is illuminated by the light and see the notes, songs and words and colour, and sleep. All the colours and all the dreams there in the beam. A beam of notes, a chord of colours, white music, melodious light, sparkling, spangling, skin-pricking brave sun, the light, the banner, the blush, the notes themselves, the own person's own self, perceiving the light and making the music.